Perry Paylor is deputy state's attorney in neighboring Prince George's County, though he grew up and lives in Montgomery. He has been in private practice and headed the Guns and Drugs Unit in Prince George's state's attorney's office. Perry Paylor, welcome to I Hate Politics.
Good morning, Sunil. Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here today, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to talk to you about my vision for justice in Montgomery County.
All right. So you want to be state's attorney in the county. What are the issues you think that the new state's attorney will have to address?
Yeah. The main thing is that criminal justice is evolving. It's evolving throughout the country, and it's not evolving at the appropriate pace here in Montgomery County. Areas that I'll focus on is expanding diversion programs, juvenile justice, and how that looks in Montgomery County. We're going to be at the forefront at the intersection of behavioral health and criminal and the criminal justice system. And then there's the issue, major issues of the integrity and accountability issues. Two things that I'll bring with me as experience dealing with a criminal, a conviction and sentencing integrity unit, and also a public integrity unit. And, you know, we can get deeper into that, but the criminal, the conviction and sentencing integrity unit will upon application, really take a hard look with fresh eyes at disproportionate both convictions where there may not have been sufficient evidence or there may be new evidence, obviously with technology and DNA, and then also sentences. We know sometimes that, you know, certain populations were subjected to unnecessarily harsh sentences, particularly when they were outside of guidelines, whether or not it was appropriate to apply enhancements. Also, we're gonna have a public integrity unit. That unit will, you know, focus on police accountability, particularly as it relates to use of force and fatal shootings. And then we'll also hold public officials accountable as well. So those are some of the things that we're gonna bring to the office that I think is in step with where justice is evolving nationwide. And we see it, quite frankly, here in Montgomery County.
Can you say how criminal justice is evolving and exactly where Montgomery County is not evolving?
One of the things is the use of diversion program. So I see my role as a state's attorney is to be able to deliver a workforce that's not bogged down with a lot of criminal convictions, particularly for first-time offenders and nonviolent offenders. And so with the creation and the expansion of diversion programs, and I want to define it, but diversion, anytime within that period between arrest and criminal conviction, there's a timeline, there's different hearings, there's discovery. But during that period, you can offer programs, whether it's therapy, whether it's restorative justice where you interact with alleged victims, whether, you know, it's community service where you get the accountability piece. And then upon completion of the conditions, once the conditions are met, then the case is dismissed. So you get the accountability piece, and then you also get someone whose record is preserved and can enter the workforce. Along with the diversion programs, particularly the ones I work with in my current position, as Deputy State's Attorney in Prince George's County, we offer education component.
Your goal is to not prosecute minor offenses so that it releases your attorneys to do other work.
Yes, but I want to be clear about the word prosecute, right? So in my mind, prosecute means more than, it's in a more expansive role than taking a case to conviction. Right. And so once an arrest has been made by the police and the case has been charged, now I find it in my office. So now it needs to be reviewed and we need to have an objective review of what's best for all involved. And if we believe diversion is an appropriate recommendation, then we would set that case on a path where that defendant would have the opportunity to receive the appropriate treatment or receive the appropriate opportunity for education, things of that nature. And then once we get the treatment, once we get the accountability piece, if we make a decision to dismiss the case when that person has completed the program and shown that they really have atoned for that behavior, then that case can be dismissed. And the last point, but I don't see that as not prosecuted.
Can you preemptively identify what these small offenses are that bogs down attorneys in Montgomery County State's Attorney's Office?
Yeah, and I would say, you know, some of the possession cases, other than marijuana, to be quite candid, right? Some possession cases, minor theft cases, assault cases, sometimes when, you know, you might have gentlemen fighting at a bar, and when a bouncer gets involved, they might get assault charges, things like that. So we would evaluate.
But how much of the state's attorney's work currently is that kind of thing you think is minor?
Yeah, the district court dockets are pretty heavy. So I would say there's a substantial amount of cases charged in the district court that could be resolved through diversion.
Do you think it's like 50% of the cases? You think like, yeah, you know, 80% of the cases or 20%? I mean, is there a sense you have of how much you would actually be able to do by identifying and focusing on these things and going, okay, these are diversion cases. Let's test them for that purpose.
In Maryland, we have two courts, the misdemeanor court. All charges start out in the misdemeanor court, even homicides. Everything is charged. They get a CR number, right? And then cases are reviewed and determined to be indicted. So a homicide would be reviewed if there's sufficient evidence, probable cause, grand jury funds, or criminal information filed, then they're indicted. So those cases are headed to circuit court. So I would say about 30% of the cases that remain in district court could be ripe for diversion.
Okay. What is that number in Prince George's where you work now?
I would say about the same, about 35-40%. Yeah. And we do offer it in a number of cases. We have a whole traffic diversion.
Of the 30% of cases in Prince George's and in Montgomery, how many are actually diverted? Comparative.
We do much more. We do, because we have more programs. We run about 7 or 8 diversion programs out of our office.
From the 30% pool that you mentioned, how many are actually being diverted?
Out of the eligible pool?
Potentially.
30% of cases. I mean, I have to get you that. I don't have the hard numbers.
How much better is Prince George's than Montgomery in this respect?
I would say a lot better.
What is that measure that you're using to come to the conclusion that Prince George's is better?
Well, what I can tell you is, like, for instance, the programs that I discussed aren't even online here in Montgomery County. So, you know, for instance,
we want to look at the end, right? We want to look at the output, right? Not just at the input number. What is your output number? I mean, what impact are you having there that is not happening here?
Well, what my response to you is that we are seeing lives change. And I'll give you two examples. We run a program called the Back on Track program. It was started by Kamala Harris when she was district attorney of San Francisco. You have a drug dealer, a drug offender, and this is not someone seeking addiction treatment. You have a drug dealer, they're arrested, they're charged with a drug offense, first-time drug dealer. They have to enter a plea of guilty. They get the conviction on their record. Then they're offered the program known as Back on Track, where they have to complete 280 hours of community service. We do a diagnostic, and we determine that where they are in terms of their education. And we offer everything from a GED to a certificate program through the community college, all the way through an associate's that we pay for. Then there's life training skills. We have counseling, but we also connect folks with our employment services through the program. It's an 18-month program. We have a graduation. On graduation day, you get a probation before judgment, you get an immediate expungement, and often you have immediate employment. When the Brave Boy administration came online, that they had about 2 to 3 persons in that program. Now we've increased it to 25. There is no comparable program like that in Montgomery County.
Sure, I understand that. But what program does Montgomery County have?
Nothing compared to what we have. Nothing that compares to that.
There must be some, right?
Well, the one program that they do is for minor thefts. They will continue your case. You go down and you can sign up for some community service. upon completion, they will dismiss your case. But they don't have the, like I said, the life skills training, the counseling, things of that nature, they don't offer. I want to talk about another program, a reentry program that we offer. And we're the pilot program for the state in Prince George's County, where we recognize that we had a high level of high number of offenders between the ages of 17 and 25 that will be returning from prison. So we started a program called Emerging Adults. And in that we work with a nonprofit, and we began the counseling a year to 8 months before they return. We actually have been meeting through Zoom. We have candidates. We talk about housing insecurity. We talk about education, where they are in terms of their education, where they are in terms of employment, and trying to make sure that they have these pieces in place upon their release. So we don't wait until release to try to get things in order. We put things in order with the incarcerated person for a period of 8 months. Then when they graduate from the program and release, they have their ducks in a row ready to go. And there's no comparable program like that in Montgomery County. So when you say, Perry, what are the numbers? It's zero compared to when we did the first cohort, and we had about eight returning citizens. We're going to expand that program, and I'm going to bring that program to Montgomery County when I'm the state's attorney. We started the Juvenile Lifers program. That program was adopted by the state to what we know as the Juvenile Justice Reinvestment Act, where we have worked with two juvenile offenders who were given life, and based on a review of their sentence, we felt like it was appropriate after 20 years, they served 20 years of their life sentence. We were able to make compelling arguments for their release. And one was actually hired, you know, in our office. And so that's something that we're extremely proud of. So for you to say, what are the numbers compared to Montgomery County when they don't offer those programs? It's not apples to apples.
A lot of the discussion that we have had is around, you know, young people. And that really goes into, I think, juvenile justice as well. Sort of, you know, you're talking about 17 to 25, but it's, you know, also you mentioned high school students at some point. And juvenile justice is a big part of this, right? What do we do wrong in terms of juvenile justice in Montgomery County? In your view, what do you think needs to be done? You can compare that with Prince George's as well, if you would like.
Right. Well, look, one of the things that we know that young Black and Brown youth are charged as adults at an extremely inordinate amount here in Montgomery County.
What is that number? Why is that extraordinary?
Between 2011 and 2020, youth of color comprised 90% of the detained population and 100% of the juveniles charged as adults. So 100% of the juveniles charged as adults.
What is that number in Prince George's?
It's a different demographic in the county, because right now, Montgomery County, we only make up 18% of the population, whereas we're 65%, African-Americans are 65% of Prince George's County. So that, once again, right. And so I can comfortably say they might make up 75 to 80% of those charged as adults, but it's not the same pool because we only make up 18% of Montgomery County.
Right. Do you have a jurisdiction that looks more like Montgomery County that you can speak to?
No. And I'm going to tell you what's interesting is just Montgomery County is one of the most diverse counties on the planet. Right. And particularly we have cities such as Rockville, unincorporated areas such as Silver Spring that are extremely diverse, Gaithersburg. So Montgomery County is unique. Sadly, though, where we see lack of diversity is in our young population is charged as adults. So we are charged at an extremely high rate for crimes that might not necessarily be charged and where they might not necessarily have to stay in adult court. So here's what I want to talk about. And I always use the four letters A, B, C, D, and that's adolescent brain cognitive disorder. We know that the brain science has taught us that, you know, males in particular matured somewhere at the age of 25, 26, And sadly, you can be charged as an adult as young as 14 in Maryland, right? But you, one of the things that I plan on bringing here is to have a behavioral health specialist under contract to review all the cases when a young person is charged as an adult to make sure that when it is appropriate, they have the opportunity to be waived back to juvenile court and receive the treatment based on their particular needs. So the motto of our office is going to be see the whole person. We want to make sure that our judges and our prosecutors see the whole person when we're making an evaluation of what is the appropriate disposition for that person.
Your comparative perspective on over representation of Black and brown kids who are charged as adults is the population number, okay? Which is one way of looking at it, right? Another way of looking at it is, you know, across jurisdictions. Are there other jurisdictions that do better than Montgomery in this respect? Do you know them?
No, I'm not aware of any jurisdictions that have the same demographic makeup as Montgomery County. We can look at other jurisdictions who do not have the same amount of diversity as us, right? And still see that they have higher populations of African-American youth and are not charging African-American youth as adults at the same rate as Montgomery County.
So what is that jurisdiction?
I would say Prince George's County. And I would say even the District of Columbia, who still, you know, the demographics are changing there, but they don't charge at the same rate. Any rate is lower than 100%, right? So 100% of the juveniles that are charged as adults are Black and brown in Montgomery County. And so I'm confident if you look at Howard County, I'm confident if you look at Anne Arundel or Prince George's, it's not the same rate. And so one of the things is that—
Why do you think we have this problem?
Well, I think it starts at the top. And I think what we need to do is be able to evaluate— It's culturally legitimate to have our young men, Black and brown young men, to be deemed as adults.
But what's peculiar about Montgomery County that it happens, right? Why does not the same thing happen elsewhere?
I think part of it, I would say, is the lack of diversity in that office. And part of it is I don't believe that they're keeping up with the times where we would have a behavioral health specialist evaluate the DGS report and make a recommendation. And that's why I go back to ABCD. When we talk about, some of the cognitive disorders that have gone from childhood adverse experiences, things of that nature, we don't hear that coming out of the Montgomery County State's Attorney's Office now.
Do you know that the current State's Attorney's Office does not have or does not contract behavior health specialists?
I am not aware of it. I practiced defense for 15 years, and I was not aware of it. And we have not seen any evidence of that thus far. So, you know, I don't know where, for what recommendations. I have not seen that state's attorney or I'm not aware of, or my colleagues have not informed me that they brought a doctor in to testify whether or not this person should remain in adult court or be weighed down to juvenile court. And I'm not talking about someone from Department of Juvenile Services. I'm not talking about DJS. I'm talking about someone retained by the state's attorney to give them an independent analysis that they can rely on when representing the whole person to the court.
But we do have mental health court.
Yes, he does have mental health court.
Does that not function the same way?
No, that doesn't go into the evaluation of whether or not a juvenile should be retained in adult court. That doesn't.
But does that mitigate the problem?
No, not as it relates to juveniles, because they're not benefiting from mental health court. We don't want them. And there's not, for mental health court, there's a diagnosis and an illness. This is different than whether a juvenile has reached the age of maturity such that they need to be in adult court. I think they're just two separate. I don't want to blend them together because they're just two separate things, right? And so there's no illness in whether a person has matured to a certain level such that they should be responsible for their actions as an adult. And we know that they should, you know, the science has told us based on brain development that they're still children and would benefit from treatment. And if our expert tells us, and I tend to believe what the case law, the Supreme Court cases said, that these children brains are not developed to the point where they can appreciate their action. And if we can show that they've benefited from treatment, then I believe they should be kept in juvenile court.
Well, that's an interesting position to make, actually. It's very interesting. The first law to make, you know, children up until 26, actually children, is Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care Act, and it allows your children to remain on your health plan for that long. So, you know, we are moving in that direction. Car companies will not rent to young people. Are you of the view that, you know, maybe we should delay driver's licenses because their brains are not developed as well? Do you think, selective service should be delayed? Have you thought about that at all? Because the consequence of saying that these are children is a big one.
Well, you know, I actually, living here in the county, we have provisional driver's license, and I think that's a good thing, right? So I would say provisional driver's license up until 18. What we're finding now is that some people that, you know, are waiting past 16 on their own. They just aren't.
But do you want it to change legally such that the legal structure comes in, you know, compliance with what we know about brain science, as you just described?
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest, I don't know enough about it in terms of how it impacts driving. I wouldn't be opposed, particularly if there was data that showed that as it relates to speeding tickets and accidents, particularly accidents with injury, if we see an increase in that particular group, then I think that it's something worth looking into. But that was the benefit of a provisional license, you know, because I believe at first, when you get your license, you have to ride with a parent for a while. And the benefit of, you know, for a lot of 16-year-olds, most they still live at home with their family. So they get that kind of opportunity to gradually expand and improve their driving skills. You don't want a first-time driver, 18 or 21, to have a job, move to Chicago, and here, by the way, here's your driver's license. And you're like, wait a second. Here you get a chance to kind of live in the comfort of your home with your family, but you're driving, you're learning to drive on streets where you're familiar, right? Streets you grew up on. And so there's a benefit to that before even waiting until 18. Because think about it. Not everyone goes to college, but college or the military, you might not have an occasion to drive. You can get your driver's license at 18, and then you're on campus for 6 months at a time. Or you can be in the service, and you're on a base. So now you're not really getting the opportunity to continue to drive. So I believe, I really thought I benefited, and I think a lot of young people do, from that two-year period of being at home, you know, 16 to 18, where you're driving on familiar roads and you have loved ones that can ride with you before you just thrust out into the cruel, mean world without any support.
You said that you want to have a conviction sentencing unit that will look at historically and perhaps in look forward at where, you know, are those sentences appropriate? I think that's the purpose of them. And then sort of make a determination about how to proceed. That's, you know, sort of, I understand that. But you also talked about a public integrity unit. Tell me your concerns about public integrity. And, you know, you talked about holding public officials accountable. Tell me about where you think Montgomery County public officials are not accountable and where there is a need for public integrity unit in the state's attorney's office.
Yeah, well, one of the things in having not investigated, but if I was the state's attorney with this issue with the CAO, the last CAO in these books, I don't know what was going on, but that would have been something I would have investigated, right?
You mean Andrew Klein and his—
Yes, yes. So I'm not sure of the issue. I don't want to say anything that wasn't there, but I would have had someone at least.
That seems very, really small sort of side
issue. It could be small, right? But voters need to know that someone's holding them accountable. And you can investigate and nothing could be there, right? But we saw what happened to the former mayor.
Do you have any other sort of larger examples than that?
Well, Not necessarily, but that's because sometimes people don't have a place to report. What you'll find is particularly when you have a public integrity unit, is sometimes there's two things. There's not a place where people are comfortable making reports. And then on top of that, there's not a place where people trust and have anonymity to know that they can make such reports. So,
but is your need for this hypothetical or is it real?
No, it's real. It's real. We need to hold public officials accountable.
Yeah, I understand that. But do you think that the current system of holding public officials accountable, we have an IG, we have, you know, other forms of accountability, including elections, are they not working in your view?
No, but I think as the state's attorney, it's my responsibility to have a place where people can report criminal allegations to our office.
And the current state's attorney's office, there is no place to do that?
There's not to my knowledge, no.
But the state's attorney will say, "Then why don't you just come to me? I will, if there's a true public corruption issue," I'm sure he's not a person to back down from that one.
Well, you have to talk to him, right, about that. But I know it's my plan to have a public integrity unit. And one of the main things where I disagree with the current system is as it relates to police fatalities, fatal shootings in the county. This system that, working out with the state attorney in Howard County is not something I would continue.
Can you explain the current state of affairs with respect to how Montgomery County deals with use of force and police shooting fatalities in particular involving the police?
Yeah, so it's my understanding that there's an arrangement with the Howard County State's Attorney's Office that police fatalities, fatal shootings by police in Montgomery County are prosecuted by Howard County State's Attorney's Office. And to the extent Howard County has police fatal shootings, those are sent to Montgomery County. And for whatever purpose, they believe that gives them a sense of independence. I don't want to speak for the current state's attorney, but what I can tell you is that, it's my role when the voters put me in, they are depending on me to hold our police accountable.
Sure, but why is the current system not working? Why is it broken, you think?
Because I have seen, first of all, there's an inordinate amount of time from Howard County. Their investigators aren't familiar with the county, right? But also, when questions are asked of the current state's attorney in Montgomery County, it's always deferred to the person in Howard County, where people need to know, they can look me in my eye and understand I'm the person handling the case, and they will get all the answers they need directly from me. No one voted for the state's attorney for Howard County that lives in this county. Right. And so it's important that people know, as a state's attorney, I can maintain objectivity and I can protect the citizens of Montgomery County from all crimes, including police fatalities. They have to have that confidence that I can do that job. And I'm the only candidate. I have sued police departments. I've sued police departments for wrongful death. And I work in an office where we have prosecuted officers. We have homicide case pending right now for illegal shooting of a citizen that was actually, I'm not going to get into facts, but so it's not strange for me. I come from a culture where we hold our police accountable ourselves. We don't send it out to somebody else. And that's a practice I will bring to Montgomery County when I'm state's attorney.
Barry Paylor, thank you for coming on I Hate Politics. Good luck in the campaign.
Thank you. And I've enjoyed my time here, and please invite me back when you get a chance.
You can find out more about Perry Paylor at perrypaylor.com, and you can follow him on Twitter @PerryPaylor.